years ago. We had 5 men at the table. 4 men would go out. 1 man would stand awkwardly in the front, stare at y'all. But it was to make sure that nobody was missed. And we went down, because numbers dwindled, we went down to 4 men, which was a little more efficient. Although, as we got wider in girth, the aisle got a little bit crowded, and sometimes we would bump into each other. And now that we're fewer in number, men, we're down to 3. And Ron suggested this and said that we were going to put it on Ron Harrison and hope that it would all work out. And Ron did a splendid job, both balancing the table and leading songs. But what I would ask, the reason I bring that up, is that with one person in the front, in the center, dealing with both sides, is you may need to help. You may need to pay attention and scoot to your left or scoot to your right and just help that individual out. And there is going to be the occasion when we miss you. And if we miss you, don't be embarrassed. Don't be hurt. Don't be offended. Just simply get somebody's attention. They have to pass back by you. And we will get you. But as an individual who struggles with change, mainly because I'm lazy, we're gonna work our way through this. Really good to see Bruce. I don't know where he went. I saw him. There he is. Good to see Bruce back with us. Equally as good is to see Mark back from his trip. Anytime somebody heads to the Middle East, we wonder if they're going to come back. Mark can find trouble, so I was a little more concerned about Mark than I was Emma or James or, you know, Susan or any of those. So it's very good to have you back. We have been studying out of the book of Galatians, chapter 5, the fruit of the Spirit. And we have been fortunate enough to have lessons by many different men of the congregation, which I've enjoyed immensely. Ted brought this up last week. I think it's good. I think it's good that we hear things from a different perspective. I think it's good that us men get out of our comfort zones. We looked at the subject of love, and we learned that he who does not love does not know God. For God is love. We studied the topic of joy. And we read in Romans 12:12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulations, continuing steadfastness in prayer. We have joy. We studied that quite a bit. Peace. Be anxious for nothing. In everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, letting your requests be known to God. Long-suffering or patience. You also, James 5, verse 8, be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. We looked at kindness in 2 Peter 1, 7. To godliness, brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness, love. Those are things that we need to add to our lives. Goodness, we studied. Psalms 107, verse 9. For he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry with goodness. Faithfulness. Psalms 118, verse 8. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put your confidence in man. And just last week we studied gentleness. And I thought it was an excellent, excellent lesson on gentleness. And I really appreciated the avenue that Ted took when he was talking about gentleness. And he was talking about the way that we teach the world. The way that we reach the world. But in gentleness, Ephesians 4, 2, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing one another in love. So these are the fruits of the Spirit, that we had the privilege of listening to men bring lessons. We got to listen to Carol White, who, in my opinion, has one of the best speaking voices on the planet. Jerry Bassett may be right in there. We got to hear Dean Cruz preach. And we all got very excited about that because we've seen in the notes and we've been looking for a preacher, and he's silly enough to have said yes. And so starting next week, we're going to be listening to Dean on a full-time basis. I'm very excited about that. And then we got to hear men of the congregation that we don't hear on a regular basis. So that brings us to the topic that we're going to study today. And Ted made the comment, man, I'm glad I didn't pick that one. I picked this topic not because I felt that I was the most qualified to preach it to you. Yeah, so she's laughing. She knows. Honestly, the reason I picked this, it's sentimental. Jerry Bassett used to appoint us our lessons. And Jerry Bassett had a way of giving you the lesson that you probably needed to study the most. And Lenny handed me this piece of paper, and I looked down through it, and I thought, well, I need them all, but I need that one the most. Which one would Jerry Bassett have given to me? And this is it. And so we picked this topic, and we're gonna get into it. But I want to ask you a question first. This is a fill in the blank. I don't want you to shout out the answers. I just want you to think about it in your mind. People fail to make real, lasting change in their lives because they lack what? You ever tried to diet? If there's nothing good around to eat, dieting's not that bad, right? Yeah. Try to diet during the holidays when you're baking. It's tough. What about this one? People destroy the lives of the ones that they love the most because they lack what? Or this one. People who love God and have righteous intentions will be lost because they lack what? The answer to those three questions is self-control. So we were given a list: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and gentleness. And we're going to look at those a little bit further. But that list was followed with self-control. And what I want us to do today is just look at some verses that deal with self-control. Let's look at Proverbs 25, verse 28, which Evan read. I believe it's up here on the screen. This is thanks to Ted, by the way. I don't do technology. It says, a man without self-control is like a city broken and left without walls. Self-control is extremely, extremely important. It's so important, in fact, that when Paul was given one chance to talk to the governor, Felix, governor of Rome, in Acts 24:25, that's what he chose to talk about. It says, now he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. And Felix was afraid. Is that what you would talk about? It's interesting to me. You're given one chance to talk to somebody, and you pick those things. So how important is it? Self-control, if developed properly in our lives, will make our lives better in almost every way. When it's missing, our lives are made more difficult and unfulfilling. Side note, love to watch live PD. I don't know, it's kind of like going to the state fair. You can feel better about yourself after you watch live PD. But that entire show is filled with people who lack what? Self-control. Or common sense. How organized our lives are is a direct result of our self-control. You know, whether we suffer life-changing addictions, bad habits, directly correlates to our self-control. Our reputation in this world of whether or not we're somebody who can keep our word, can be counted on, reliable, whether we have a good work ethic, what comes out of our mouth, our relationships are all directly correlated to our self-control. It's hard to overemphasize the fact that personal discipline in our daily lives is extremely important. If we look at Proverbs chapter 16, verse 32, it says over there that he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. We often look at powerful people and we're impressed, aren't we? But it's not that physical strength that's impressive. It's whether or not that person can control themselves. Let's just flip over to Galatians 5, if we could. So in Galatians chapter 5, we can see that Paul actually gives two lists, doesn't he? Now his first list says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousy, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murder, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, that such who practice these things will not inherit the kingdom of God." So he has these two lists, and they contrast each other, but they, as much as they oppose each other, they answer each other, don't they? So we're given this first list of all these things that are out there, and then we're given a second list, and at the bottom of that second list is this word self-control. And I was reading, when I was studying for this class, I read of a teacher that was teaching a high school class, and he asked his young people in his class to say, what is the answer for these things in this top list? And the overwhelming answer to how do we resist immorality, uncleanness, outbursts of anger, idolatry, murder, drunkenness, revelries, is self-control. Now, you can use some of these others, and they'll interchange, but it was pretty overwhelming that these young people understood that self-control, or the lack thereof, was the problem when it came to these many sins that were listed in Galatians 5. So what is self-control? Brett and Stacy and I and Vicky were having lunch, and we were talking about, you know, the fact that I was going to do this, and they threatened me, said I had to keep it within 20 minutes. So, sorry, might not make it. But one of the things Brett and I were talking about is we just can't stand it when you define a word with the word. Yet, how do we define self-control? It seems to be self-defining, doesn't it? Webster's defines it as restraint exercised over one's impulses, emotions, and desires. The original Greek term comes from the root word, and I will murder this, enkrates, not right, which means strong, robust, having power over. But really, self-control, control of oneself. It doesn't get any simpler than that, does it? So we can be done. We can go home. We got it. We preached the lesson. We know what self-control is. And we're going to move on from there. Let's turn over to 2 Peter. Sorry, you don't get to go home. 2 Peter, chapter 1, verses 5 through 8, Peter there also has a list. And in Peter's list, down in verse 5, he says, "But also for this reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to your virtue knowledge, and to your knowledge self-control, and to your self-control perseverance, and to your perseverance godliness." And the commentaries that I read pointed out the importance of where Peter put self-control in this list. So he put self-control after what? Knowledge. Which is implying to us that we have to have some sort of understanding to control ourselves. We have to have some knowledge. We have to have some sort of base. And when we're dealing with this topic, as Christians, we have to understand what God expects of us. And then he follows self-control with the word perseverance. In other words, I controlled myself today, so I'm done, right? I controlled myself once? No. It is an ongoing activity in our lives. It's important that we continue to strive each and every day to maintain some self-control. What do we need to control? Turn over to Matthew 5. So in Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 and 28, You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman and lusts for her has already committed adultery in his heart. What do we need to control? Our thoughts. We need to control what we think. Romans 8, verse 5. We're going to turn a lot. You know, as I was studying and I was doing this, I was actually using my device because it's faster to find books. And I thought, well, one of these days I'm going to have to learn how to use this thing that's in front of me, because we wouldn't have to do all those turn-ins. We could get up here. But right now we're going to turn our Bibles. So we're in Romans chapter 8, verse 5. Another verse on thought. Chapter 8, verse 5. For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit on the things of the Spirit. We need to spend more time worrying about what we're thinking in our minds, prepare our minds, worry about our spiritual well-being. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. So Philippians 4, verses 6 through 8. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus. Last one on thoughts. Let's go to 2 Corinthians. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. 2 Corinthians 10, 3 through 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God, for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing forth every thought into captivity and to the obedience of Christ. There's one of the struggles you have when you're preparing a lesson is how much to put in. And there's just a ton of verses that we could read. We could expound on these verses, but we're going to leave it at that. We're going to understand that God is expecting us to guard our hearts, to guard our thoughts. What about our eyes? Can we turn over to the book of Luke, the 11th chapter? And we'll look at the 33rd through 36th verse. Luke 11, 33 through 36. No one, when he has lit a lamp, puts it in a secret place or under a basket, but on a lampstand, that those who come in may see the light. The lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is good, your whole body is full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body also is full of darkness. Therefore, take heed that the light which is in you is not darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, the whole body will be full of light, as when the brightest bright shining of the lamp gives you light. It's a lot of words to say what we cast our eyes upon affects what we have inside us, what we fix our sight on. We're a visual people, aren't we? We're moved by pictures, by stories. It's important, especially in a world like we have today, where there's just so much out there, so much depravity out there. The younger generations won't remember this, but do you remember when we used to watch television shows? And when they would occasionally show a bedroom, there was two twin beds. Husband slept over here, wife slept over there. It was really important in television to portray some sort of modesty, right? And now what we see, what is brought into our homes, is not that at all. When my children were young, they used to watch the Disney Channel. And there were a lot of really great shows on the Disney Channel. And then all of a sudden, these shows were not so great. We've got teenage pregnancy, and we've got all these other things, and it's just all okay. You know, and the Disney Channel has just made a serious departure, hasn't it? From where we used to be. So the television is one that we pick on a lot. But we can put ourselves in situations out in the world where we're seeing and partaking of things that are going to affect us inwardly, can't we? And we need to be careful with that. What about our emotions? Over in Genesis 4, 6 through 8, we'll remember God having a discussion. So Genesis chapter 4, verses 6 through 7. And the Lord, Genesis chapter 4, not 6. Well, I have the wrong verse written down here. Boom, boom, boom. Excuse me. This is not my wife's fault who types up my lessons. This would be my fault because if you tried to read my writing. God's talking to Cain, and he's asking Cain, why are you angry? And he's saying to Cain that if you do what I ask you to do, say it. 6-4?
4-6.
4-6. What is wrong with me? I'm having a seizure. That's what it is. I am? Oh, I was in Genesis chapter 3. It says 4 right up here, but it says 3 right down here. So, the Lord said to Cain, thank you, Ron. See, we're a family. You got to be there for each other. Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you. But you should rule over it. Control your emotions. What do you have to be angry about? Why are you angry? What about Ephesians 4? Let's flip back the other direction here. Ephesians chapter 4. I'm actually going to read out of Ephesians chapter 4. And we're going to be 26 and 27. Be angry and do not sin. And do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. And then we'll also read verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. We'll go ahead and finish with verse 32. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God has forgiven you. So we need to get a grasp on our emotions, don't we? So I told Nolan that I was going to do my very best not to use him as an example in my sermon, because I like to pick on Nolan a lot. And I'm really not going to use Nolan as an example, although the fact that Nolan gets to work with me. Notice I said gets. Nolan has to work with me. And I have these days where I try to do way too much. I start my Monday mornings with a plan, and then by 6:30, 7, the phones have rang 15, 16 times. Contractors have stopped by. My plan goes out the window. This customer complains. That customer complains. Whatever it is, that you know, they want to, and I get frustrated. And when I get frustrated, I will lose control of my emotions. And then I will have to apologize. Now, I will also say this. Nolan works for me. I'm obnoxious. And so I will sometimes push Nolan to the point where he might occasionally lose control of his emotions. And that's something that I love working with Nolan, because we get to talk about those kinds of things. We're both striving in the same direction. He's a very driven young man. He wants to do things perfect. He fails. I fail. But we get to at least have an adult conversation about these facts. And we don't make excuses for each other. where oftentimes when we're in the world and we lose control of ourselves or we do something wrong, and our friends in the world will do what? Well, they'll help you make an excuse, won't they? They won't hold you to a standard, the same standard that Nolan and I try to hold each other to. And we fail. But out in the world, we live in a world where it's okay. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to lose control. You know, we love Bruce Banner, right? He gets angry. He turns into the Hulk. He tears stuff up. He wrecks the city. He's our hero, right? We like to watch those movies to where the person's just getting beaten down and then they see something and they just rage and they lose control and then all of a sudden they whip everybody on the screen. That's exciting. We kind of revel in it, don't we? But ultimately, there isn't an excuse, is there? We're told that we need to keep those emotions in check. James 1. James chapter 1. Verses 19 through 21. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. How do we control our emotions? With God's word. Something else that we need to control is the tongue. Emily and I were having a conversation on the way to Portland yesterday. And one of the things we were talking about is that, you know, I need to be babysat. I really do. They got to keep an eye on me. Because oftentimes, again, being obnoxious and being fairly quick with comebacks and sarcasm, you got to keep an eye on me. Especially when I get around family, I can be. And so we were talking about that, and then we got up to where we were going, and we were there, and we were talking about it again, and Kirsten was there too, and Kirsten and Emily decided that they needed to have a word. They needed to have a coup. So if I get out of line, what you're going to hear is, hoo-hoo. So that's the thing. If Dad's saying too much, you just make a noise. You get his attention. And we laugh about it, and we joke about it, but it's true, isn't it? It is so easy for us to say things that we shouldn't say. Turn to Proverbs chapter 10. So in the book of Proverbs, somehow I ended up in Psalms. Proverbs chapter 10, we're going to read verse 19. And then we'll read a little bit further. Verse 19 all by itself says, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. I mean, we could just leave it at that, couldn't we? So the more we talk, the more apt we are to overstep our bounds. It's our words that get us in trouble. Let's go to verse 32. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. Now we can... Larry actually taught a really good lesson, a couple of really good lessons on the tongue, so we won't spend a whole lot of time on that, because I can't match that. But let's just think about that. We need to pay attention. And the multitude of our words is sin. It is not always necessary to say what you are thinking. And if what you're thinking shouldn't be said, then we need to worry about what we're thinking. Our bodies. That one's a given, right? We need to have self-control over our bodies. 2 Thessalonians So I thought it would be a good idea to mark my Bible with these pieces of paper, but now I just have a big mess up here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor. So I've got other verses written down, but we can just kind of leave it at that, can't we? We need to recognize that our body is not necessarily our own. It is here for God's work. And that Larry spent a lot of time on sexual sins when we were studying the law. And I don't want to go into all that. I get uncomfortable talking about it anyway. But it is really easy. Today, what is it today? It's my body, right? It's my body. It's my body. It's my body. We hear that all the time. We have to be careful. We have to remember what our bodies. We're just given this vessel. And we're here to serve God. So the question, I suppose, then, is how do I regain if I've lost my self-control? Or how do I maintain self-control in my life? Let's look at Romans. Romans chapter 8, verses 12 through 14. So Romans 8, 12 through 14. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of man. We need to be led by the Spirit of God. We need to put aside our desires. Why do we lose self-control? I mean, let's just be real right now. Why do I get mad? Why do I say things? Why do husbands or wives cheat on their spouses? Why do people steal? Why do people drink excessively? Why do people do drugs? Why can't they get off drugs? Why can't you quit smoking? Why? Because you don't want to. That's the bottom line, folks. We lose self-control because we want to. I am a diabetic. I am overweight. I need to diet. I need to eat healthy. But it was just Halloween, and for some reason, I like those disgusting little candy corns. Love those things. Well, those have two adverse effects on me. One, weight goes up. Two, about a 550 blood sugar. Neither one of those are great. There is nothing good about candy corn. And yet, I will eat it. Is it because I just can't resist it? Or is it because I don't want to resist it? I see it. I want it. I choose to have it and choose to worry about the consequences later. Because what do we think that we all have? Time. I think at 53, well, my dad is 85. His grandfather lived to be 99. Forgetting about the fact that my grandmother passed away at a very young age. But we want to focus. We've got time, don't we? And in our lives, we think we have time. So we decide that today, I don't want to control myself. So when Mark makes me angry, I'm going to say mean, ugly things to him. Or most likely, I'm going to say mean, ugly things about him. Mark hasn't made me mad. Although he did point out my weakness. We think we have time. We don't make change because we don't want to make change. So how do we maintain self-control? We studied just recently the life of Joseph, didn't we? I just want to read a little story from the book of Joseph. So let's go to Genesis chapter 39. It's a familiar story, so we'll just buzz through it really quick. So Genesis chapter 39, starting in verse 6. This is after Joseph has been thrown into a pit, sold into slavery. He's now the head of the house at Potiphar's. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hands, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was a handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass that after these things, his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused. And he said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I. Nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were inside, that she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand, and he fled, and he ran outside. So oftentimes, when we think about losing self-control, we make excuses, don't we? So for me, I get angry, and I say things, and I do things. And I could try to justify that with the fact that growing up, I was an angry, angry child. There was a lot of things that went on. You know, I felt left out and alone because my sister required lots of attention. She had multiple health issues. My brother came along 6 years later. He was young. He's the baby. The baby always gets spoiled. Isn't that right, Emma? I mean, it's terrible. Then, for some reason, I just was one of those kids with a target on my forehead, and I was picked on, and I was bullied brutally. Not just once, but multiple times. I was failed by adults. I was allowed for all these things I had, and I just became angry. I became bitter. And for a long time, I just ran that way. I was like, well, you know, it's not my fault that I'm this way. But we make those excuses, don't we? Then you study the life of Joseph, and it doesn't matter how hard, there's just nobody in this room that has gone through what this young man went through. He went from a super high spot to a pit, to his brothers wanting to kill him, to being sold into slavery, to being accused of adultery, to being cast into prison, to being abandoned in prison, and then to raising himself up out of that. He was then afforded the opportunity to get even with his brothers. And come on, folks, how many of you were disappointed in that? How many of us would have wanted to handle that situation when they had a power over their brother differently? And yet, because he devoted his life to service of God, he kept God ever present in his life, he was able to resist those things. There's something that he did that oftentimes we fail to do. He was presented over and over and over again with an opportunity to sin. What did he do? He fled. Sometimes, when the temptation is too great in our lives, whether it is through our workplace, whether it is with the friends that we choose to associate with, the activities that we have in our lives, we just need to flee. I think most people that commit marital infidelity don't do it at the first opportunity. I think it's an opportunity that presents itself and presents itself and presents itself. I think when we get into drugs and those types of things, that's not something that we just jump straight into. It's presented and it's presented and it's presented. And it just comes at you and it comes at you and it comes at you. And sometimes what we need to do, I had a roommate. He was a pot smoker. You know what pot smokers want you to do? Smoke pot with them. Now, it's different in today's world, but back then, we had some guilt associated with the things that we did wrong. And so the way that you alleviate guilt is you get other people to do those things with you. So he would push the issue, push the issue, push the issue. And I can thankfully say that I never did. But was it because I was righteous? Oh, it goes back to the candy corn, folks. It was because I knew that I lacked self-control in certain areas of my life. Now, I wasn't a Christian. I just knew that if I tried something and liked that something, that I was in trouble. It wasn't that I thought I was better than the person that was doing those drugs or as good as the person that wasn't doing those drugs. I was afraid of me. We have to be honest with ourselves. We cannot put ourselves in situations if we know that we can't handle those situations. So if you struggle with an addiction, maybe it's gambling. Maybe you shouldn't go into the little rooms or eat in the bar that has the little gambling machines. Probably shouldn't vacation in Vegas. Probably should avoid those situations. Do you have trouble with overindulgence? Probably shouldn't hang out at the Super Bowl party with your buddies. Whatever it is, we have to honestly recognize that it is up to us 100% to be in control of our self-control. Right? So the conclusion. Galatians 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Paul put himself under God's control. Paul wasn't ignorant of the truth. Paul knew what God would have for him to do, and he put himself solely under God's control. He let... Lenny brought up the phrase in class this morning. When you're faced with a situation and you ask yourself, what would Christ do? People used to wear those bracelets as a reminder, whatever it takes. But you put yourself in Christ's control. What would God have me to do? And then we have to realize that we aren't fooling anybody. Our God is ever present, ever aware. Now, those three family members back there might have no clue that I have been overindulging in candy corn. They do now. I don't know, I bought like $40, $50 worth of Halloween candy the other night. I had like 15 trick-or-treaters. I came home the next day, my Halloween candy's gone. Why? Because they know if it's left in a bowl, I'm going to eat it. So we can help each other, right? So I can talk to Nolan and I can let Nolan know these situations are hard for me. And when my phone has gone off for the 16th or the 17th time at work, and my contractors are not owning up to their responsibilities, and then Nolan can simply say, take a breath, get a grip, you look like you're about to blow, say a prayer, We can do those things, can't we? But can I help you if I don't know you have a problem? What does the Bible say? Confess your sins one to another. Why? Because we're weak. Because we're a family. Because I can't help you if I don't know you. And you can't. Now, so now you see me in the store and you walk by, look in my basket, especially around October. If there's candy corn in there, take it out. Because it's not for them. They don't eat it. You'd be doing that out of love, wouldn't you? Because you care. So we need to care for one another. We need to watch out for one another. We need to understand one another's weaknesses. But we can't do that if we're not a family. If we don't trust each other. The lesson is yours. I appreciate the opportunity to get up here. I appreciate even more that Dean will be up here for quite a while. And I won't have to. Again, I appreciate all the men who have stepped forward and done lessons. I appreciate Ron Harrison trying to use the PowerPoint so that I can say, that's why I don't use a PowerPoint. I appreciate Ron Newcomer stepping outside of the pulpit away from his notes. We're growing, folks. I appreciate your attendance. If there's somebody here today that is struggling with your self-control, you're making bad choices, then trust your brothers and sisters. Lean on your brothers and sisters. Come forward. We will be happy to pray with you and assist you in any way possible as we stand together and sing.